Fracking. It's a technology that has spread across massive areas of the United States in the last decade, scarring landscapes with hundreds of thousands of oil and gas wells. The process drills for oil and natural gas by boring a hole into layers of shale rock, and that shale rock contains tiny pockets of oil and gas that were previously too expensive to extract. Through a process called horizontal directional drilling, fracking operations are able to pump silica sand, water, and chemicals into those tiny pockets. The round pieces of silica sand are like tiny marbles that support fractures so they don't collapse, but allow for the oil and gas to escape and flow up the well. But while the many dangers of fracking have been well documented, like the health impacts from exposure to toxic chemicals and radiation, air pollution that can cause asthma and other respiratory issues, spills in rivers and streams, and the release of the potent greenhouse gas methane, an often overlooked side effect of the industry comes from the mining of the silica sand itself. On this podcast, we explore frac sand mining. How is the sand mined and where does it come from? Which companies are mining the land? And how does the industry treat its neighbors? And who bears the brunt of the problems that accompany frac sand mining, which range from displacement to impacts on farming to water contamination to air pollution? From Frac Tracker Alliance and Public Lab, with support from Save the Hills Alliance, this is Undermined. In areas of the American Midwest, like Augusta, Wisconsin, communities were divided when mining companies came to town, offering families lump sums of cash in exchange for land rights. Nearly a decade later, residents in western Wisconsin are more united in their disapproval of frac sand mining, and the impacts speak for themselves. Earthquakes, blasting, poisoned well water, breathing problems, damage to crops and livestock, and broken promises of reclamation made by companies who were eager to profit from the region's resources.
I have lived in the town of Bridge Creek in Wisconsin for the past 30, almost 31 years.
That's Christine Yellow Thunder, an environmental activist of Lakota heritage who is a tree farmer and a poet. She and her husband Ralph, a Ho-Chunk elder and Vietnam combat veteran, live a short distance from the High Crush Mine, and their tree farm borders it.
I have always been environmentally oriented in my thinking and in my way of life. However, I didn't realize that as much until I moved here. I'm very much in love with the land. I didn't know very much about the community, but it really didn't matter. My husband's people had land in Eau Claire County, and so it's a traditional place of living. And it just suited us all together very, very well. About in the fall of 2010, I first learned about frac sand mining. A neighbor contacted me, came over and said, "Do you know about the sand mine moving in?" I knew nothing about sand mining at the time. And I learned that there had been a public meeting, which obviously wasn't very well advertised at the time, where the town board discussed with the owners of the corporation that their proposal to come in and mine a significant amount of property near my home was a big concern to me. This news alarmed me greatly. So then I decided to contact the town board and issue a concern that I felt like many people did not know about this proposed sand mine moving in. And I petitioned verbally at a town board meeting that, from my understanding, most of the Amish community knew nothing about this public meeting. So they agreed to have another public meeting. It was held at the fire department, and many people came. And the corporate representative discussed sand mining, and very little was known about this process, but I dug in and I dug deeply about all the effects of sand mining.
People who have lived in communities impacted by frac sand mining are eager to share their stories and hopefully prevent devastation from happening in other towns.
Over time, I learned that mining corporations were looking for towns that were not zoned when a town is zoned, it's protected by the county in which it resides. So all of the laws that are in place regarding the use of water, runoff, things that affect the environment cover that town also. Bridge Creek is an unzoned town. They allowed Hi-Crush, the corporation that it was putting in the sand mine, they allowed it to build a dry plant on the land that they had taken from Bridge Creek.
You know, the landscape here is, it's strikingly beautiful. You know, it's a lot of rolling hills, tree-covered hills, and then, you know, farmland.
That's Tom Pearson, a cultural anthropologist who teaches at the University of Wisconsin-Stout. He's also the author of When the Hills Are Gone, Frack Sand Mining and the Struggle for Community.
Frack sand mining specifically is something that began to really pick up after 2006. If I remember correctly, some of the first mining operations that specifically wanted to extract sand for use in hydraulic fracturing, they started to appear around 2006, 2007, somewhere in that range. And that was a point in which very few people in this area had ever heard of hydraulic fracturing, or they had never even heard a reference to frack sand. I never thought I would write a book about sand mining or about local activism. It was after a couple years of living and teaching here that I began to hear references to sand mining and seeing articles in the local newspaper about proposed sand mines and some controversy related to it. And initially, I didn't really think much of it because it's just sand. Like, what's the big deal?
When you start talking about surface mining, or open pit mining, it's also called, you're talking about the destruction of land. There's no other word for it. You destroy that land.
That's Terrence O'Donohue. He and his wife Marianne live on land bordering an Amish community that neighbors the Hi-Crush mine.
I believe it was November, an article in the paper, the Eau Claire paper. In November, I don't remember the date, of course, but in November of 2011, the reporter interviewed the town board chairman, our town board, Bridge Creek. And the chairman was extolling the virtues of frack sand mining, that it would bring lots of jobs, high-paying jobs to the area, and blah, 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 blah. It was all about money.
The promises that the corporation of the sand mine made were that they would be employing a significant amount of people. What then occurred was that they promised to have a job fair. And at that job fair, if I recall right, over 600 people showed up. They subsequently employed 5 people from the town. That, number one, was very offensive. Early on in 2011, the town board put together an ordinance for non-metallic mining, and silica sand mining is non-metallic. And they worked hard, having had no experience with doing such an ordinance in a very rural community. And they put forth an ordinance that was then presented to the town in a town board meeting. And we were allowed to have 3 minutes of speech to speak our concerns. And I soon learned that the town board was pretty much content with what they had done. But the community, a handful of us who had researched, provided the town board with lots of research that we could accumulate on the impacts of using the aquifer to that intensity, the silica sand blow that occurs and endangering people with the particulates. We were concerned about how in the world were they ever going to reclaim this land. And we were also concerned with the noise pollution and the lights that run 24 hours a day and the conveyor belts that they transport the sand from the mine to the dry plant that run 24 hours a day. And we were just concerned about the use of roads, and now trains were going to run 24 hours a day. All of those concerns. And we, as a group, individually pooled our money and hired an environmental attorney by the name of Glenn Stoddard. We had him look at the existing ordinance and found, we stated our concerns, and then he guided us to rewrite the ordinance with protection and to present it to the town board.
A lot of the frac sand mining operations, they would involve a significant amount of truck traffic. There would be the machinery involved in the extraction activities themselves. So whether that's blasting or use of excavators to just to dig out the sandstone, there would be just the activity from that equipment. A lot of frac sand mines might have conveyors or processing plants that are nearby or on site where material, after it's excavated, it's being washed and stockpiled and ready to be put onto to rail cars. And then there'd be perhaps a rail spur nearby. But in some places, some communities, you'd have this kind of concentration of mining activities, maybe multiple mining operations. People who live nearby, they're dealing with noise from all that activity. They're dealing with light pollution. They would describe, vibration just from all that equipment. There would be dust. So lots of concerns about just dust from all that activity, but in particular silica dust, which gets to some of the health concerns that people had. But aside from like physical health concerns, the relatively sudden introduction of all of that industrial activity into communities that didn't really have a lot of experience with mining operations, that dramatically altered people's experiences there and undermined the things that they had valued about those places that had anchored their quality of life, just the peace and quiet that they associated with their community, or their relationship to the rural landscape that was radically altered by mining.
The handful of us who spent many hours and our own money to rewrite this ordinance so that we felt more protected, expanding the amount of land that the mine would have to repair if they had done any damage, the private land. We put in so many safety measures, and then had Mr. Stoddard, Attorney Stoddard, come to our board meeting and present our revised ordinance. I can tell you that at the time, the board sat silent. They didn't ask any questions. They didn't take a vote. We couldn't do anything, and they let it fall by the way. I have come to learn that existing town board, not the one that we have now, but that particular town board was fearful of being sued by the mining corporation. There had been a second and a third mining company that had requested from the county in which Bridge Creek resides to move in with a reclamation plan and to mine sand. So a second sand mine was allowed and permitted under the ordinance that Bridge Creek had at the time. And they were 50 yards, if I recall right, 50 yards from the edge of the Eau Claire River. Pretty dangerous sand mining operation. And we had all these concerns, and our ordinance, after all that we had done, was totally ignored. Some of the impacts that I have experienced, and also that I've learned from neighboring farms that surround the mine, are, as I mentioned, the blasting. The first time that I experienced the outcome of blasting, I was painting my bedroom and up on a ladder. The house shook and rattled all of my windows and startled me unbelievably. I had never been in an earthquake, and I wasn't sure what all of that was that I was experiencing, but I soon learned that I wasn't the only home that experienced that kind of shaking and rumbling, and this continued on for over 2 years. High Crush also talked about having a holding pond on the actual mine site property. And by that time, a small group of us neighbors had done research on exactly what happens, and we learned two things. A holding pond is it holds a great deal of water, but it also holds polyacrylamide, which separates the sand from, I think it's the silica sand from sand in general. So the polyacrylamide is a carcinogenic, and it does not leave the ground. And when I asked at this public meeting about why were they lining these holding ponds if there wasn't a concern, my response that I received was that, well, we don't have to line the ponds. You can just deal with it the way it is. We don't have to do this. And not a response to why are you using polyacrylamide if it's a carcinogenic. Another concern is that the holding ponds have overflowed, and the polyacrylamide has seeped into the surface or into the land itself, and no one knows which way it's going. A third thing that I've been extremely concerned about is that the mine was allowed to drill high-capacity wells, and a high-capacity well takes water out of the aquifer, and they have several high-capacity wells, and they were to be permitted. And the first high-capacity well was permitted, and later we learned that they had installed another high-capacity well into the same aquifer, and they had not received a permit for this. And somehow, in the long haul, in dealing with the county and the DNR, they were allowed to keep the second high-capacity well. Why that is of a concern is because the backflow from the mine with chemicals goes into the aquifer, and our groundwater can be affected. And one of the things that I learned over time, I haven't spoken to this Amish family myself, but others, other neighbors have, and told me that their water is affected.
And we have been fortunate here in that this is an Amish community. I'd like to tell the story of one fella's dad here. He's got a farm up on one of the hills northwest of us, between us and Augusta. He came in and they offered him $10 million for a chunk of his farm. And he told him, my farm's not for sale. And I said, well, we'll give you $12 million. He said, no, my farm's not for sale. And they said, I don't think that's what the Amish think. I don't think a person could be a very good Christian with that much money. And they told this farmer, Amish farmer, well, think of your children. And he got mad then. And he said, my children don't need that money either. My farm's not for sale. Drop my land. they ran across that with a whole lot of the Amish. They are farmers. To them, the land is everything. The land is like their blood, their soul. Pretty hard for a guy who's been a farmer to turn down $10, $15 million for his farm. And like Hyclus came in, and willy-nilly, during a drought, we had a drought going on at the time, they drilled three deep high-capacity water wells and ran them. They didn't have the permits to drill them. They didn't have a permit to operate them, and they didn't have meters to meter how much water they were taking out of there. A high-capacity well will suck home well from the surrounding farms. It'll suck them dry.
The other concern that we've had is that when you disturb this much of a landmass, there are things like arsenic and in heavy metals in the ground, and they become freed. And so arsenic, lead, many other heavy metals are exposed. I don't have the details of all of how that affects the community, but none of this was addressed. There have been no safety concerns addressed as far as the aquifer.
We learned that the chemicals can leach into groundwater. Flocculants are the chemicals they put in the water to wash the sand. And flocculants grab all the non-sand stuff, the humus, the dirt. And because they only want the clean sand, they don't want mud. And it grabs hold of all this dirt, bonds with it chemically, and then sinks to the bottom of their wash tank, their ponds, wash ponds. Groundwater is going to go into surface water of our trout streams and lakes with all these poisonous chemicals.
Once silica sand is mined and gone through the process of separating the silica sand from the sand, it is unfortunately, in this case, transported to a dry plant where the silica sand is dried and stored for shipment, and in this case by rail, to wherever it's going, wherever they have sold the sand, to whomever they've sold the sand. The dry plant is a very enormous multi-building processing center, and then the dry sand, once they've dried it, sits outside in an enormous mound. I would call it hillocks. They're actually hills of sand, and they wait for transport via the railroad. So as you travel along western Wisconsin, Chippewa County, Dunn County, Monroe County, you will see that the dry plants all look alike, so you can recognize a sand plant or a sand mine from the road. The piles of sand leave an enormous concern. Even currently, universities are studying how to measure the amount of this very fine particulate that enters the air. They have tried to measure how far these particulates blow. And over 15 years of inhaling this particulate, one can develop silicosis, which is a terrible disease, and you can no longer breathe through your own lungs.
Silica is glass. It's what all our glass windows are, fused silica. And so you have this minuscule dust, glass dust floating in the air that gets into your lungs and cuts at your actual lung tissue form scar tissue and form something similar to COPD. It's called silicosis. And if it gets bad enough, it's going to kill you.
There's a lot of research on exposure to silica dust in confined workplace settings. They're at a high risk for developing respiratory problems and silicosis and things like that. And there's a lot of research on that in particular, and efforts to therefore protect workers in those settings and to limit their exposure and to regulate, regulate worker exposure and make sure that they're wearing respirators and whatnot. There was not a lot of research on like the issue of silica dust in like open air settings, like whether or not people who live in a certain proximity to mining operations, to the extraction site itself or the processing plant or the truck routes or the rail spurs, if people who live near there are being exposed to silica dust, and if so, if it's at a level that is potentially putting their health at risk. So because of that uncertainty and because of this scenario where you had mining companies downplaying the concern, but then local activists drawing attention to it, but then also you have some disagreement among experts themselves, where some will say this is not really something that we need to worry about, and then others saying we need to do more research. So that's an issue that got a tremendous amount of attention. There's been some studies that have been funded by mining companies, and a lot of monitoring that hasn't been taking place over the last decade now. So a lot of communities that permitted mining operations, they would often then require monitors to be placed near mining activities to try and measure silica dust and at different sizes as well. And then even that became contested as what particle size should be measured. And so there have been different research initiatives, some linked to industry, some independent from the mining companies. Crispin Pierce at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire has been one of the public university researchers who has been following this issue for many years. And he still, even today, he continues to put, he oversees different research efforts, often with students, to try and monitor air quality in communities that host mining operations. And that's an ongoing research area for him. So silica dust, it's one of those things that raise a lot of concern and still does. As Crispin Pierce has said, it's probably not something that people, should view as this acute, urgent health threat, but there needs to be more research done to better understand what sort of impacts on air quality fracking mining has and whether or not that could potentially put someone's health at risk. Let me step back a second. So there is an active mining operation here in near Menominee, and that was one of the first mines that was permitted in the area. There was another one that was proposed not far from where the current mine is at, but it was adjacent to a place called Hoffman Hills, which is this kind of nature reserve, really beautiful, rugged, hilly area. The meetings that I ended up getting invited to were hosted in a local residence garage. His name is Jerry Lausted, and he was well known related to this issue. The mining operation that back in 2006-2007 that was proposed adjacent to that was viewed as a threat to Hoffman Hills and to this what many understand as a sort of shared community resource. So Jerry and others were involved in organizing against that proposed mine, and they successfully convinced the county board to deny a permit, and they stopped that mining operation. And so when Vista Sand a few years later came to town, residents kind of reactivated some of those local networks that that they had organized previously around the effort to save Hoffman Hills.
The fracking industry has struggled to find a profitable business model from the start of the drilling boom in 2008, but executives who were profiting found ways to keep shareholders happy enough to continue the frenzy. In recent years, and especially in the wake of the COVID crisis, more and more fracking companies are declaring bankruptcy, finally unable to keep up the charade. But the fracking industry is not dead yet, and there are plans to establish additional sand mines in the Midwest currently in the works.
There's so much uncertainty around frack sand mining, and mines are beginning to go bankrupt, and what will happen to these sites. You know, several years ago, like, the issue of reclamation was one that was part of the local debate and conflict, but it was often this sort of hypothetical thing years down the road.
There were a lot of presentations that we had made regarding, if you strip away the topsoil of the land, you cannot put it back if it stays in a big pile for years and it loses its life. They also had promised that they would have to reclaim the land. To date, the land has not been reclaimed. Now, currently, the only thing that will grow on that mine site would be grasses. Trees will not grow. You cannot grow crops on it because there is no quality topsoil left.
EchoWest wants to continue to operate here, so they have done some landscaping of their mines. But there's much, much, much left to be done on the Augusta mine. And they're out of here. They still have the permit, I guess, for a while yet to mine. But the market dictates everything. We've seen that, how it dictates for big oil.
The really interesting but sad issue that still confronts me is that when a town is unprepared to deal with something like a mine of any kind, but in particular the sand mine, we do not know things like the mine making a promise that they would reimburse any damage done surrounding the mine, but they controlled it to be less than a quarter of a mile. And the repercussions from the sand mine go much, much further. And I would say that a mile and a half away from the mine is still minimum of what they should be doing reparations for.
Two organizations that have worked closely with some of the community groups in Wisconsin around frack sand mining are organizations like Frack Tracker and Public Lab. The Save the Hills Alliance was one of the local grassroots networks that developed around the frack sand mining issue and organizing around this issue, because, you know, frack sand mining is one of those things that when the industry is booming, there's a lot of concern and involvement, and then as things die down, then it's harder to sustain some of the organizing around it. But it's an issue that hasn't gone away completely, and so it's been helpful to have those connections with organizations like that, and then to just kind of to frame this, what seems like a local issue, in a context, in a broader context of hydraulic fracturing and what's happening in other places around the country. I think it's important to reach out to local officials and to attend the local meetings. Local democracy, the local democratic process, is it still incredibly accessible and a lot of influence can be exerted, through that process. So organizing with neighbors and engaging in the local decision-making process and learning about how you can do that and what public meetings are taking place and opportunities to express yourself. A lot of people know very little about local government and how that works. And so people who are reacting to a proposed Fraxamine, it's often a sort of crash course in that local political process.
I don't believe there's any promise that they can make a community or an individual that is worth the damage it does to property, to the landscape, to the community. And it certainly can cause disruption of relationships between community members. Come and see what a sand mine looks like in a predominantly agricultural and forested area. Come and see the impacts. You can see them with your eyes. And I'd say get as many community people together exploring and doing research on this topic as possible. And don't be afraid to hire an environmental attorney. They're hard to find, but they know their stuff and they know the laws in Wisconsin, and they will assist you in being able to protect and participate in your local government. Participating and monitoring your local government is key to being aware of what's going on in your community, including things like mining. I don't trust the corporation. I don't trust Hi-Crush. They have done nothing but lie to us, and so I will wait and see. That's all I can do is wait and see. I don't breathe a sigh of relief, and I certainly haven't forgotten all of our struggles and all the research we've provided that fell on deaf ears.
Thank you for listening to Undermined. This audio story was produced by me, Joe Hoy, with Public Lab, along with Shannon Smith and Ted Auk from Frack Tracker Alliance. Shannon Smith edited this story. Because of the COVID crisis, we weren't able to conduct these interviews in person. And because high-speed internet is difficult to access in some rural communities, we recorded these interviews by phone. We'd like to thank Save the Hills Alliance for making this possible, and to Christine Yellow Thunder, Terrence O'Donohue, and Tom Pearson for sharing their insights. Thanks also to Pat Popple, a matriarch of the movement to hold the frac sand industry accountable, for her counsel on this project. To get involved and learn more about the impacts of frac sand mining, find us on the web at publiclab.org and fractracker.org. Thank you for listening.